We'll call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but I hope my friends in the audience from the IBW note that they have to show up on time for work, and four of us are Democrats, and we're on time. So. Mr. Claypatch, you wanted some time. You have to be somewhat nice, Stephen. I know that's hard for you, but welcome to the committee, both of you, and just identify yourself for the tape.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Claypatch, and I'm the proud and honored business manager of IDW, Local Union 292 in Minneapolis. And as tradition is usually in this committee, is to greet you with some sort of Finnish greeting, but you know full well I can't speak Finnish. We've spoken different languages in our time, but you know I can't speak Finnish.
Steve, you have a hard time with English.
Yeah, I know that.
So do I.
Yeah.
Well, another Democrat showed up just for the audience. Okay, go ahead.
Talk to
your plumber.
With me also is Dan McConnell, is a business rep out of IDW 292, and on behalf of the men and women that are in this room and the men and women that are represented by IDW, local unions around the state, there's 5 inside construction locals, probably 5,500 construction electricians in Minnesota. All 5 business managers are here in this room, representing or being employed by over 400 electrical contractors in the state of Minnesota, was somewhat near the vicinity of $440 million last year in wages and fringe benefits that are taxed in the state of Minnesota. We're happy to be here to make a presentation. One of the issues that we have is an issue that comes before this committee, and that's the education of men and women in the state of Minnesota. What we want to talk about today is that the Minsky system has a direct effect on employment in the electrical construction industry. Something I've been working on probably since the early 90s. And one of the things is that we contend that there's too many people being graduated out of the vocational school system that directly affects the commerce of our electrical contractors. And again, the philosophy of MNSCU is one to educate for a vocation. And we're going to show you a couple of things today very quickly of how MNSCU is currently educating an abundance of electricians, causing direct effect of unemployment in the industry. And very quickly, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'd like to ask the people that are in this room that are unemployed to stand up. Mary?
15 months.
Thank you. And then the ones that have exhausted their benefits, I'd like you to stand up, remain standing. We have a lot of people out of the state of Minnesota working also, so what I'm going to do is quickly go through this presentation, quick PowerPoint. You have one in front of you in your packet. We've provided all the committee members. And basically the first couple pages are just kind of a downturn in the electrical industry. What we're going to do today is compare plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, just as kind of an opportunity to make it understood that there's more training going on in the MNSCU system for construction electricians than any other craft, and that's why we're concerned. We've used statistics from the state and the federal government, DEED and MNSCU itself, the Department of Labor, to put the presentation in front of you. I'm not going to take a whole lot of time going through each and every single statement. I just ask that you follow along with me. So the first page is basically demographics, just indicating that we're contending that 319% training of electricians higher than any other trade. So it's a comparison against any other trade. You'll use the statistics in the second page to kind of look at the amount of carpenters in the industry. The bottom bullet is 22,460 carpenters in the industry, and the plumbers is 10,500 by statistics of the state of Minnesota identifying our craft. And at the same time, we have 10,700 electricians. And the unemployment insurance figures are there. And on the next page, where there's the title is 27% of electricians affected by unemployment. Basically, some numbers, again, in your own time, I'd ask you to take a look and read them due to respect out of the committee. We're just going to go to the next page, which is a table, which really explains it. And again, we'll be able to revert back to the previous pages, so it'll be the white piece of paper, and it's the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Benefit Account Experience Selected Occupation. We're just going to go right across the top. Again, as I said, there's 10,780 electricians by DEED's own figures identifying construction electricians in Minnesota. And you look at in the years 2003, 2004, and 2005 there, The claims per year in 2003 is 3,200 at approximate annual weeks, and then the actual weeks paid. The next number is the average dollars per claim. That's $5,400 per claim for that year. And now you're catching on that there's $17.9 million in unemployment claims for 2003, 2004, 2005, for a total of $47,337,000 in unemployment claims just for construction electricians. If you look at the field for the carpenters, again, in the previous pages, we described that there's 22,460 carpenters identified by deed that are performing that occupation in the state of Minnesota. If you follow those figures across for 2003, 4, and 5, again, you'll see there's $42 million, $288,000 worth of claims for unemployment benefits. And again, their field is twice as large as the electricians, and the electricians are claiming more in unemployment benefits. The same for the plumbers. The field for the plumbers, again, in the previous pages, was 10,500. But going real quickly, 27% of all electricians have been unemployed, compared to 15.9 and 16.4 for the carpenters and the plumbers. So the field is so much less for the electricians, and yet we're showing greater unemployment. We'll go through why that is in the next pages. And the page will be construction trades training, and the first bullet will say Minsky Institution sponsors 67 instructional programs offering training in 10 distinct construction trades. Basically, electrician, sheet metal, carpentry, plumbing, bricklaying, etc. Those are what we're talking about, 10 distinctive trades. And during the period 2000 to 2004, there were a total of 5,963 graduates. That's in all 67 programs across the state of Minnesota. So real quickly, go on to the next page. Of those programs, the 67 programs, 16 of them are electrical programs across all the campuses. Recently, two have just started up. And you'll take a look at the second bullet. There's 2,700 of them, or 47% graduate from the construction electrician program. Our question is why is this industry so much more important than any other industry, especially comparing it to the unemployment statistics? So again, if you look at the last bullet, you're seeing that 9% of all craft workers in the state of Minnesota are electrical based on these numbers of 116,000 total construction programs. The next page will show you another white table. So all the green pages ahead of the white tables kind of preempt the statistics in the white tables. And you'll look at the total BLS employment. That's the total number of craft workers by that trade in the state. And you take a look at it, it'd be 9.2% is electrical. And then the total number of programs. Those are Minsky programs, or those are total programs. 16 of them are Minsky. And then again, you take a look at the total graduates. And you'll see that the construction electrician, even though we're 9% of the entire workforce, we still have 25% in total graduates from the Minsky programs. And again, we ask why. We're going to compare ourselves with the nation, because a lot of times you're always going to hear that, well, the demographics are showing that the nation's going to pick up in construction work, and thereby, you know, we're planning for it, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here again, 40 states in the union have programs. Minnesota has ranked number one 4 times in the last 5 years in graduations. And, again, Minnesota graduation rate is 464% above the national average. The next white table is the total number of graduates against the entire population in those states. So if you look at the state, the total population, and the graduates, and then we just based it off of that. You'll see that Minnesota is using the colors, makes it simple. We're first in the nation. Next page is real simple again. By craft, Minnesota also ranks number one, three out of the last 5 years, and number one overall for the 5 year period in the percentage of graduates versus the entire electrical construction industry. So what they're projecting and what we're doing is this state is graduating more, double what it should be versus the national statistics. And again, if you go to the next page, you'll see that. These are all the programs throughout the state of the United States by state. Again, following the columns over, the state, the total number of people who are working in the state that are identified as electricians, and then the total number of people that are graduates from those programs, and you'll see that Minnesota is first 3 times in the nation out of the last 5 years. And just to compare it, we just put a very nice visual in there. Everybody knows Florida's booming, Arizona's booming, California's booming in construction industry. Here's the graduation rates that those states have versus our state. And I think you can very easily see that we're increasing our graduation rate far above what anybody else is. And again, the question is why. Finally, and here's why we're really here. We think it's a direct drain on the state of Minnesota as far as benefits and wages. We think that unemployment is not what the earning wages and fringe benefits are as far as turning over money in the state of Minnesota and providing taxes. To put an individual through a school, here's the numbers for the years. You'll see that Minsky, in their own numbers, contribution for or to educate the student, are those numbers up ahead of you, a little over $4,000 to $4,500 per year. Focos are by two-year programs, and 488 graduates for those 2 years. Again, cost Minsky right now $12.6 million to educate people for this industry. The next page is basically saying that our unemployment figures, if you revert back to those on the table earlier, is $47 million in drain of unemployment benefits or paid out benefits, people not working versus the people that are being educated to take jobs that aren't there. So if you take a look and you add Minsky's contribution to educate the electricians, or the future electricians, it's $12 million. You add it to the $47 million, you have a $59 million problem on our hands with the state of Minnesota, and we think it should be adjusted. Finally, training itself doesn't create jobs. When the unemployment is an industry-wide problem, Minsky is exacerbating the problem. Minsky continues to add programs and increase graduates despite severe unemployment. And government investment in training should reflect the need of the industry and demand of the students. Just because it's popular, it's a popular program, you know, and they've got graduation and placement rates. Something a little bit more difficult that I've talked to a few in this room, but it's a difficult situation. You take a snapshot within a year of whether you're placed or not, but the real snapshot should be taking a look at 3 years, plus again, taking a look at the demographics of the people that are unemployed. And comparing that to whether we cycle ourselves for true training or vocation, or if we're doing something that really does create a tax problem and a revenue problem for the state of Minnesota by not supplying people that are earning an income. You know, education is what Minsky is for. It's not to affect commerce. So we're really concerned about it. Finally, I have one other person I'd like to speak with your indulgence. I don't know how much time I got, Mr. Chairman. She's got about 3 minutes. Got 3 minutes. But I want to first off say that we have met with Minsky, and they're understanding that the problem is there. But I met with Minsky in 1991 and entered into a survey with them through a third party for exit surveys, you know, to look at people 3 years out. And in that thing, we had a bunch of discussion that never evolved into anything. The only way that you can keep the discussion going is to educate. We're here to educate you here today, let you know that there's a true problem. Take a look at what the education system is offering versus do they have an ownership or just an opportunity to educate and drive revenue in a college. We don't think that that's correct. So we're asking you to take a look, keep the pressure on Minsky. We're in full discussions with them. I think we have respect for each other between the people, Manuel Lopez, curriculum director of whatever his title is. I apologize if I don't know. But we've had a pretty decent meeting, and I think the only way that we can keep the pressure on again is through the assistance here. But I do have Mary Mechanic. I'd like to speak. Mary is typical of anybody in this room. And if you'd indulge her 3 minutes, she'd be happy to tell her story.
Yeah, that was a long introduction. That took over 3 minutes, late man. So. Welcome to the committee. I heard complaints.
I'll pay to see that one.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself as a case.
Hi, I'm Mary Mechanic. I'm a member of IBW 292. I was put on the spot. They asked me 5 minutes ago. I told Senator Ellen Anderson that I have worked 4 months a year since 2002 in the state of Minnesota. You try and make your house payment on 4 months a year. Congratulations. Welcome to the construction trade, I guess. It's kind of annoying in 2004 when I'm sitting at home after 8 weeks of fighting to get unemployment for the first 8 weeks of the year, then to find out that I had 13 weeks for that year. I worked my job for 2 months, and July 1st, I'm unemployed and without unemployment. And I get an email in my junk email because, well, one has plenty of time to look at their junk email when they don't work. And what is it? It's from some school offering, telling you that you can make 80, 90, 100,000 a year, sign up for our school program, become an electrician. Well, they got a scathing email from me, which they never responded to. But, you know, that's not a big surprise, but, you know, they're out there. They're selling their school. That's how they keep their jobs. That's how they stay in business. But why only electricians? You know, they're churning these electricians through. They don't have jobs. We have 500 that are, you know, not working now. And next summer, hopefully, we'll be working, but it's not a guarantee. So, you know, please address this problem. Make it more equitable. You're giving our tax dollars. Of course, I can't contribute much because I only work 4 months a year. But, you know, you're giving our tax money to these schools. You know, at least be fair and don't have them fighting for our jobs and taking them away from us. Because when they first get into any program, they're cheap labor, and that's all the construction industry is looking at. So, you know, 4 or 5 years later when they make full dollar, they're going to be unemployed too, which will exasperate the problem until things happen. You could help us out a lot by cutting the number for that program. There are other trades to get into. There's other jobs.
Okay. The questions of the witnesses, yes, Representative Mahoney.
It's not really a question, it's a couple of comments. One is, I'm very grateful that I'm red and green deficient. That means I can't be an electrician, and I failed their test. But the other is that, I guess my question, it is a question. You got 16 programs training electricians, and it's very difficult. We can't get anything in the bio industry to be trained in the state of Minnesota at this particular point, except for one small program that puts 13 people out that actually are getting hired two months prior to getting out. I guess the question is, how much is Minsky, and maybe you can't answer it, Mr. Claypatch, but how much is Minsky spending, overspending on electrician training, and maybe I can convince them to spend it on bioscience training.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, thanks. I can't answer that. That's going to be a Minsky question, and I'd encourage all those questions you have that are directly related to be asked to them. I think through their own testimony, as they're bringing their budget, they brought an additional budget request at $170+ million to this committee not too many weeks ago. The chancellor sat here and he said, you know, because of the programs and our ability to cycle in a timely manner, you know, we educate, et cetera, et cetera. And then the next sentence, the chancellor said something to the effect that, well, we have to raise our enrollment 74% to satisfy the nurses. Okay, the nursing shortage. Well, again, it's very simple. You can't operate in a cycle like this, you know, where you've got peaks of employment, you drop it off within the system, and then you ramp it up to satisfy the needs. Somehow, and hopefully through our discussions with Minsky in the future, we're going to be able to figure out how to use all the statistics in such a way that you can train for what's needed. Currently, what we're seeing is a cycle like this in nursing and teaching, et cetera. But in the electrical industry, all you've got is a ramp up, and it's never decreased. So they're increasing programs. So I think the challenge for the representatives and the Senate on the other side is that they can talk to Minsky and start using statistics in such a way that they can be responsive and responsible. So that there's not just a training of an individual, but there's an ownership of a vocation that they're offering individuals. Instead of having an opportunity and constant comments in committees such as this that you're going to change your career 7 times before we die, sorry, you know, that's shouldn't be good anymore. We should be training once. People with the vocation and conviction should be staying in that industry if there's a need for it. So, be happy to answer anything, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of Mr. Claypatch? Representative Dimmer.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Claypatch?
Yes.
Okay. You said you met with Minsky. Do you have any committee set up or anything to advisory committee as to how you as a union or as a trade feels that they should be setting up their programs.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, I think it's, we have met with Minsky, and again, I think we're on a path that probably will produce something. But even in their own mission, I think that they offer 3,700 course offerings. The way I look at it is, I'm a leaf in a swimming pool, you know, and all they do is skim us off and move us off to the side. I don't think that that's going to be the case. I really think that we're going to probably have good constructive conversations. But I think as we talk to these individuals, I think we're also making it aware that they have an internal problem, and also as far as how they collect data and make it useful for other programs that they offer. So they have 3,000 plus course offerings. They have something that they have to be concerned about too. But in their own admission, they did, in their letter to us, was readily admit that there's a surplus. And also in their own admission and from the top down, they've offered a letter to all the chancellors of all the schools around the state to not start any more programs within their schools, and also to reduce their enrollment in the year 2008. The problem with the language is you can reduce your enrollment by number one. So we do have a further discussions that we have to partake in Minsky, and I think we've got a mutual respect, and they know full well I'm here today offering my not-so-subtle testimony against them.
Representative Martin. Oh, excuse me, Representative
Martin. Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Claypatch. Do you know how many workers that are trained here in Minnesota, educated here in Minnesota, under and a lot of taxpayers' dollars goes into that, a lot of money goes into MSKU, how many of those workers end up in other states working?
No, I can't give you that figure. I think an exit survey by MSKU would have to show that. We did that back in the early 90s with MSKU. It was some other name at the time. I think they changed their name for perpetuating some jobs. But did I say that? But anyhow, I think that it's real difficult to put a number on, but... we brought in an individual that was a teacher at the St. Cloud State College, the technical college up there, and readily admitted that they allow people from other states to walk in and tell people that they will hire those individuals out of that class and bring them to other states. And we made that information available to Minsky. We just find that appalling.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Mr. Claypatch, a couple of questions. The statistics in your presentation, does that represent all electricians or is it just the union members?
No, that's all electricians.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I just, since it's primarily union members here, I wasn't sure if you were speaking just for that number or if it's all in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Norris, that all the building trades in here are total numbers, not union members.
All right, thank you. I guess I'd also like to point out that Minsky is not the only source of training, you know, for electricians. There are a lot of private tech school or trade schools also that we don't have any control over. So,
Representative Norris, they have their own apprentice program too, training program.
I guess the question I'm going to ask then is, are you suggesting that Minsky have a quota system? Or, you know, as I travel around the state visiting these various campuses, the system doesn't, I don't believe they talk students into the particular course. In fact, they're trying to get more welders and they can't find them, and they're trying to, again, supply the nurses, as you mentioned earlier. What are you suggesting that MSKU do? Do they need to put a enrollment cap?
Mr. Claypatch?
Or how, what are you suggesting be done?
Chairman Rukavina and Representative Norris, there were three points that I'd like to touch on. And the very first point was, do we represent all, or does this study represent all workers? Let me quickly say that our job as unions are to go out and organize non-union contractors, provide them a business incentive to belong to a union. We're out there talking to contractors, and the contractors that we talk to, and we say we have a readily available source of skilled labor pool because we put them through a five-year apprenticeship program, and it's a formal program registered with the state of Minnesota at no cost to the state. When we talk to those contractors in no uncertain terms say, we don't need you for the simple reason that we have an available source of manpower also. Because when we put an ad in the paper, there's people that, for one ad in the paper for a journey electrician, will get over 100 responses. We'll go in there and they'll have responses, resumes like that, from one ad. And that what they say to us is there's so many people unemployed in the industry And one of the things that when we talk about the Minsky system, they agree with us 100%. And I will bring people forward if need be in the future to talk about that. They're not our contractors. So it's an industry-wide problem. It's affecting commerce both in the union and the non-union segment. Two schools are private schools out of the 18 that have education programs. So Minsky has 16 of the 18 programs. So there is only two schools out there that are private that educate construction electricians. Dunwoody being the first and foremost with the most graduates, and then there's one other with very few graduates at all. So let me answer your final question, which I think you're trying to get to, and that's quotas. I don't have the answer. I run a large labor union, and I'm in the middle of a bureaucracy of a $1.3 billion budget, and I'm trying to find a solution. And I'm asking people in this room here to keep the pressure on and understand that I think their philosophy is to train people for a vocation. I think they have to adhere to that instead of driving revenue for a support of a school.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, one final.
Go ahead, Rim.
Just a comment. That I live in rural Minnesota, and I guess this is very interesting to me, and I appreciate your testimony, because the folks that I know in my area that are operating electrical contracting companies tell me they have a hard time finding employees. So it's sort of the opposite. Maybe they're misinforming me, too.
Representative, I bet you saw many are in this room that you have to go to work for.
All right.
just to indicate, I know that Scotty Weep is in here somewhere from, where is Scotty? There he is. From 294, is it?
Yes.
On the Iron Range. And I mean, we're how many are from Clay Patches local? How many are from the Rochester local? How many are from Duluth local? Range local. See, so they're from all over the state, and I think
St. Paul.
Did I forget St. Paul? Well, we're in St. Paul. Who the hell cares? We're in St. Paul. St. Paul local.
I didn't hear Alexandria, Fergus Falls, or Moorhead.
Well, I probably forgot a few locals. Those are the ones I know offhand. Mr. Claypatch has come and talked to me, and I know he's been working with Minsky. And I'm trying to see if we can, work this thing out amicably. You know me, I don't like the God's trouble.
You're a get along, you and I kind of guy.
So I'm hoping this can be worked out. I see there's a Minsky guy hiding back there. No, the other one. The other one. They used to wear the red shirts. So we'll see if we can work this out. Your information is very good information as far as seems like there is a little discrepancy in the electrician program versus the other programs. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Claypatch, and actually to Representative Nordis, I know that many people think the trades are a pretty easy job, and to be perfectly honest, it's you can't be just a bump on the log coming off the streets anymore. We're doing computers, we're doing electrical, some of the mechanical and the mathematics and the computer systems. This is pretty high-tech stuff, and we cost the state a lot, our contractors a lot with their workers' comp, and in our training, we get a lot of safety training. One of the ways that I know some trades have tried to limit it is to raise the entrance standard. And I've seen the tests that the kids take in plumbing and pipe fitting nowadays. And I'm just very grateful that I don't have to take that test again, because the math has gone up. The spatial, can't remember how they phrased it, but when you put a round, when I used to try and put that round peg in the square hole, they've really done a lot of different things with that, and that might be something that the electricians look at. It might be something that that Minsky looks at. So hopefully it's not quotas, but with the wages that we earn and the productivity that our contractors demand from us, maybe we can take a look at it that way.
Well, and Mr. Claypatch, I've given you some ideas, and I know that the carpenters have recently worked something out with the Minsky system where there's a co-taught education package where they're going to be announcing fairly quickly where the carpenters will teach their trade to their apprentices, and then the Minsky system will teach whatever is necessary, be it English, or I should take an English course, but anyway, English or whatever, and give them an AA degree too. So maybe we can look at something like this. I think Minsky understands that we want to see some sort of compromise reached on this issue. And with that, members, Representative Detmer, did you have another question?
Mr. Chairman, I had a group in my area today speaking to this issue. Now, I understand you have an outside group that works on the power lines and so forth, but there's a shortage in that area, correct?
If that's what they're telling you, that's true.
Okay.
I'm an inside construction worker. Mr. Chairman, I just want to say thanks to the committee. I'm hoping that we do reach a result with Minsky. If not, we'll look forward to asking for some support on legislation in the future.
We've appreciated your concern on this, and we've tried to work with you, and I'm glad that your members are here today. It's great to see you at the Capitol, and go around and talk to your legislators and on a number of issues of importance, I know, to you folks. So
looking for support on House File 2139 also.
Okay. Thank you. And
can't pass that up.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank all of you, too, for coming. Representative Moore. Representative Moore moves that House File 1383 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the K-12 Finance, or do we have to go up through Finance? Through the Finance Committee. We'll just wait a second, members, while the room's clearing out. Scotty, we'll see ya. Representative Moore, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to wait for the motion to die down a bit, but I think we're good. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Can you guys scoop it all a little bit as you're leaving?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to move House File 1384.
You already did.
And
1383.
To Finance. Maybe referred to K-12 Finance. Thank you.
1383,
thanks. Also, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I have a small oral amendment, one word.
Go ahead.
On line 1.10, I'd like to change, towards the end of the line after support, it says must. I'd like to change must to may.
Okay, you've heard the amendment, the oral amendment. Change must to may on line 1.10. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 1383 is a bill that was brought to me by members of every single Native American tribe in the state of Minnesota. The concern is that now the Indian Scholarship Office is located at the Department of Education office in Roseville. I don't know how many of you have ever been there. Raise your hand. How many don't know where it is? Raise your hand. Okay.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. It's very difficult for people to find this office located down here in the metropolitan area. Accessibility for Native American high school students is very limited. And I've heard repeatedly challenges from students, high school students, and current college students of their inability to actually locate the office, to get assistance from the office, and to actually receive the scholarships now that it's located down in the Twin Cities.
So, Representative Moseley, has it made you any easier to find than...
You seem to find it quite often, Mr. Chairman, for which I'm good.
Only because of you.
thanks. But in, to that point, Mr. Chairman, in front of you, you see, I've handed out a list of school districts in the state of Minnesota which have significant numbers of American Indian students. And as you'll see, as you go down that list, the districts with the highest numbers, Bagley, Bemidji, Cass Lake Bena, Detroit Lakes, Fond du Lac, working your way down, the vast majority of the students, St. Louis County, Walker, Akeley, Hackensack, the vast majority of the high school students who would be eligible for these scholarships are in northern Minnesota. In fact, we are surrounded by far, the three largest reservations, which represent over 80% of the Native American population in the state of Minnesota. Therefore, that's why all of Minnesota's tribes and the Chippewa tribe in unison passed a resolution advocating to have the office move back home to its previous location so it can serve the students which are in most need of its service. And I will stand for questions later, but I'd like to turn it over to Sophia Julia Jacobson, who's going to talk about her personal experience with the Indian Scholarship Office.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the table.
My name is Sophia Julia Jacobson.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to be here today to tell my story, my educational story. And I'm going to start with graduating from St. Thomas University in 1985 with my master's degree, successfully under the Bemidji office. I also went on and got my education specialist degree from St. Thomas, and I graduated in December 2000 successfully under the office of the Bemidji office. And I entered into the doctoral program, and right now I'm ABB at St. Thomas. And I've had a really hard time communicating with the Roseville office to get scholarship money. My financial aid officer at St. Thomas does not know how to process my paperwork because he hasn't been trained. The communication that we have is actually triangular, where the financial aid officer processes my paperwork, my Indian paperwork, sends it to the state, and the state says it's supposed to send my paperwork to my tribe. Well, that has not been successfully achieved. During the time that I completed my 1995 degree and my 2000 degree at St. Thomas, I didn't have to take out school loans because I've been employed. I'm currently an adjunct faculty at Augsburg College, and in 2005, I made outstanding post-secondary teacher of the year. And so my credibility for going to school is not in question. I'm in the religion department at Augsburg College, and I'm the highest ranked professor there and offered full-time position upon completion of my doctoral degree. Since the program has been under the direction of the Minnesota in Roseville, the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Committee, I hate to say this, but I'm over $100,000 in debt, and I did not incur these costs before when the Bemidji office handled my paperwork for going to school. And so there's no local control. I'm talking about personal interest in Native American students when they're going to school. I've gone out to the Roseville office, and if you have been out there, it's like going to Fort Knox. You have to have security let you in and be guided through and to talk to people about your paperwork and to see if your files are in order. And so I've been out there twice trying to see somebody. I've made phone calls, I've emailed, and I've been informed that I've outlasted my limit in going to school for funding. And so I've asked for documentation on that, and I have not received it. And right now, I'm at the point of not caring about the state of Minnesota helping me finish school because I'm at the tail end of my degree, my doctoral degree. and I am going to finish and probably continue going into debt. And I just want to thank you for your time, and it's a long story and painful story, but I want you to know, as a Native American, I want to be successful and achieve my education. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions of the witness or of Representative Mo? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mo, obviously you're correct in the numbers that you brought through here and the three reservations being in northern Minnesota, but there's certainly a lot of Native American children in the metro area, and nowhere in your bill does it preclude from having an office down here to serve them also, does it?
Thank you. Representative Mo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, no, and that's thank you for the clarification. We would envision the office, the central office, being located back in Bemidji. Minsky was offered to host it. However, also there's some sentiment amongst a couple of the tribes to locate it at the Indian Affairs Council office in Bemidji. So we would find out where office could be located without any additional cost to the program, and work with the tribes to locate the most appropriate location, and with a satellite office down here in the cities, obviously, probably in Representative Clark's district.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Moe. Actually, what I was thinking is, this story is typical that folks all over are having this much trouble, it's really, really good that you're moving it. And I would guess that some of the folks I represent who have been trying to access funds from this department must be having a similar kind of issue. So, good. I mean, if there is a way to try to make sure that we have something in the urban core, that would be very helpful. And, I don't know if you need any language to that, but at least the commitment to do that would mean a lot.
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Clark, that's the intention.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Welty and then Representative Gunter.
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina. And to Representative Moe, I was just wondering, how many other scholarship programs are administered through the Department of Education? Is this the only one because of the past history with the Department of Education have jurisdiction over a lot of the Native American American issues of the past?
Representative Moe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, the Department of Ed will be coming up here and you can ask them. I know they administer some other scholarship programs. I think the majority of them, however, are administered through our Department of Higher Education, so that's why it would be appropriate location for it. But we can ask that question. Perhaps our counsel, Mr. Berg, can answer too.
Well, I don't know if the Department of Education wants to testify on the bill. I don't know. They've got no problem with this language, do they? Or do they?
They'll probably want to testify.
Does anybody want to testify from Barnett Education?
That Representative Gunther might have a question for me.
Representative Gunther, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Nadu, is that right?
No.
How do you pronounce your name?
Jacobson.
That's an easy one for you, Gunther.
I got the Jacobson one down real well. How many years have you gone to school?
How many years have I gone to school?
In the metro area.
I got my degree in 85 from St. Thomas. And then went back to the north and lived and came back and got my ed specialist in the year 2000. And I've been here now for the past 13 years trying to finish my education.
Okay, so you would prefer having an office somewhere else down here other than Roseville? Roseville, I do agree with, is a little bit hard to get around.
For me personally, I would go to the Bemidji office when I was going to school here, and they had an open door policy, and I felt very comfortable to find out how my file was and if they needed any other information. And most of all, get the support that they gave me, saying, oh, you're doing a good job, and keep it up, and that was really important to me. And I don't know about the office down here because I never thought about it.
Thank you. I think being in your position, I feel the same way. When we look at the huge amount you have in debt, do you think that better communications between the office and the student would cause less debt, more knowledge about scholarships? Because that's a huge debt.
Mr. Chairman and the committee, I agree with you, because when I went to St. Thomas and I talked to my financial aid officer, he said that St. Thomas is a prestigious school and not too many Native Americans go to school there. They do not specialize in funding Native Americans. And so we need to be educating our financial aid officers as they did in the past. I understand Bemidji office did train St. Thomas financial aid officers, but the officer that I worked with before retired, and so I have a fresh person that needs to be educated.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, ma'am. Would you just identify yourself for the tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gloria Kibble. I'm the interim director in school choice with the Minnesota Department of Education. I just would like to respond to the question about does the Department of Education administer any other scholarships, and the answer is yes. In the Division of School Choice, we do the Robert C. Byrd Scholarships, which are honor scholarships for students. We don't do any counseling with students. We just basically do the administration for it. And we would be more than happy if that went to Minsky. But that is the only one that I know of at the Department of Education, the other scholarship that we administer.
Does the department have a position on this bill right here?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. No further questions. Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman. Ms. Jacobson, is this a case of the location of the office or who really works the office, who manages the office?
From my personal belief, Mr. Chairman and the committee, I believe it's the personal touch of the dedication from the tribal community to the tribal individuals as myself to help me successfully complete my education. I don't know about the office in St. Paul because, like I said, the communication isn't there. I haven't been able to communicate with people in St. Paul office, nor successfully with my financial aid office because he just doesn't understand how the programming goes.
Mr. Chairman, so what I understand is it's not the location where the office is, it's who's managing the office and running it.
Yes, okay. With a humanitarian touch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are there any other questions? And if not, Representative Moe renews his motion that House File 1383 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Committee. How's that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Yeah. Representative Moe and Ms. Jacobson. Representative Mariani. Representative Reinert moves that House File 1931 be recommended to pass, and is this going? This will be laid over for possible inclusion in the education and workforce development omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mariani. Your bill's been moved.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, it's always good to be here. I'll be very brief I'll because I want to make sure our testifier can really share the story with you. Just very quickly, what I want to do is, first of all, shine a light on a very small, effective nonprofit that we, as a legislature, have had a partnership with for quite a long time. I know this group both as a legislator but also my other work in working on educational equity issues. This group, the Minnesota Campus Compact, is very much like other groups in other states. In fact, there's a big national network of compacts, and in many other states, there are very strong investments in the kind of work that these groups do. So first off, right off the bat, I just want to tell you that from this legislator's perspective, what we have with Minnesota Campus Compact is a proven, established, good work entity that has worked very heavily in college student service work. And so really making, in many ways, I would argue, really protecting our investment in higher education by helping students to round out their college education in terms of service work in Minnesota, which enhances their education, enhances our communities, and also, frankly, protects our investment in them. And also, frankly, helps keep well-educated Minnesotans in Minnesota. Today, the request before you today is really in three parts. We have sort of an urgent part of the request. There's an ongoing part of this request, and there's a new opportunity part to this request. The ongoing part really has to do with our historic investment in student service learning through Minnesota Campus Compact. And in fact, there is a piece of that that is in the base. It's in the governor's recommendations. However, members, as you know, there were quite a few cutbacks a few years ago, and this was one of the small areas that got cut back. So even the governor's base recommendation doesn't get them anywhere near where they were a few years ago. This is monies to do the student service learning. It's basically pass-through money. It goes through the campus compact, and it gets out into the campuses and into the students' work. So that's the ongoing request part. There's an urgency request part in that the Minnesota Campus Compact has attracted federal monies all these years to be able to do this work. That, unfortunately, is sunsetting. And so what that does for this terrific group is it really cuts into their ability to operate because they were able to take a small piece of that for their administrative functions. And so there's a request here to try to fill some of that. And then the third part really is the opportunity part, which has to do with the Campus Compact designing a way to address a very salient issue that you guys started out this session focusing on, which is the affordability issue for Minnesotans and post-secondary. They want to work with K-12 students in terms of quote-unquote literacy around affordability and access issue to post-secondary to help demystify that, make sure that our students are psychologically barring themselves from post-secondary access, know what's out there, what's available. And then there's a civic leadership enhancement effort. I'll let them describe the opportunity part much better. My hope, members, is that we can continue our many years partnership with this terrific group of folks. And so, Mr. Chair, at this point, I'll turn it over to Catherine Day, who is the director of Minnesota Campus Compact.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina. I'm Catherine Reed Day, Executive Director of Minnesota Campus Compact, and I have a short PowerPoint that I'll run through very quickly with you. But first, thank you so much, Representative Mariani. I appreciate very much your bringing this to the committee's attention. As Representative Mariani said, we are an organization that has partnered with the state for many years. Compact means a pledge or a commitment, and our commitment is to building stronger communities through service and civic engagement. We have administered, as you said, the Campus Community Partnership Program since 1989. And in the past, we've worked closely. I'm actually a relatively new director to this organization. I took over for a founding director. Senator Cal Larson was our champion for many years for this work. And when he departed, we began seeking additional champions for our work. And we are grateful to Representative Mariani for that, making that stepping forward. I think a simple way to describe what we do is to talk about the fact that we are building the civic leadership capacity of our state. We are building young people who will become the future legislators, mayors, CEOs, and community civic leaders for our country. There's a recent article in Time magazine which talks about City Year, which is doing this in New York City, but it's talking about how important it is to infuse service early in a person's life so that they remain active and lifelong citizens. We have a couple of stories here about our successes. One of the things that we have done, you look on the second page, I describe some of our campus community partnerships. One of the things we do is better preparation by engaging over 10,000 students from our campuses around the state to do tutoring and mentoring. Our campus community partnerships have taken a number of schools off the AYP list. There are three of our outstanding partnerships mentioned on this page, but there are many others that are not represented here. Secondly, we talk about better learning. We know that engaged learning learners are better learners. The illustration on this page is from Century College, where some engineering students took a real-world problem and had to create a solar oven to keep food at a specific temperature for 4 hours. They discovered almost immediately that their work had relevance to our global community because those ovens both worked and went off to Bolivia to keep food warm. But they, what was more important was the spark of connection, that their work had meaning and that they could understand what it meant to do their work. Another illustration is economic development. On page three, an illustration of a grant. This actually was part of our federal program that we administered, and it was a partnership with Crookston and the White Earth Tribal Reservation, where we were looking at the issue of obesity, and we sponsored a local foods initiative which addressed multiple issues, including economic development, better food, which meant to better health, and also leads to better learning. And another illustration is our work on campus energy. The students who you may have read about the Campus Energy Wars, which is about reducing electrical usage on the campuses, with multiple campuses working together on this, but also looking at alternative energy solutions. And Morris, campus of Morris, just won our Tribal Partnership Award in part because of their pioneering work on local energy development. Another slide we have here is just that it's worth the investment. We address a number of social issues. We find that when students are involved in service, that they're less likely to binge drink. There's national research that we cite here. One of the questions I've been asked, and I appreciate the reception I've received from members of the committee hearing about our work, one of the questions I had is, why not just invest this directly in the campuses? And that's a really powerful part of what the reason that our organization was formed. It's an organization of college presidents, and their goal is actually to work collectively, to work across systems to identify the best solutions and the best ideas and to share those practices among each other. And so really we're talking about not only the investments we make in the individual institutions, but the fact that we do work together to accomplish more together than we can individually. Our new strategic plan is really based on two big ideas, hope and opportunity. There are four planks to the new plan, and that is to increase access to post-secondary education and to improve our success rates on our campuses. And we're working, we know that civic engagement measurably improves both in both areas, that by being an engaged learner that we get better results. I simply want to draw your attention to one of the very big ideas of this new plan, which is that the presidents are going to be convening on October 1st for a summit on the issue of affordability. You've heard compelling testimony about the debt burden of our students. There was an outstanding article, very interesting article in the Star Tribune profiling why is higher education so expensive. Our presidents are going to be getting together across system and addressing this issue, and what they're able to do is really look at what is it that higher education needs to do differently in order to change the affordability of higher education. So we're honored to be the place where they can come together with their highest ideals and their highest aspirations to really do some very significant and courageous work. You see here our revenues. We are very successful in raising outside revenues. We raise it through membership dues, through corporate foundation support, individual support. We do pass through the funding to the campus community partnership support, and that's that small piece you see from the state. And then we were very successful in getting federal support, which, as I explained, is going away. It's being cut back very severely at the federal level, and it's being distributed to other states. So we're facing this gap. The bill, I think Carlos has explained, is in three parts. I won't repeat that, just simply to say there are the three elements. I would stress that the part that is part of the governor's budget is a pass-through, a very important pass-through. We are pleased that the Senate has recommended an increase for the first time in many years, and we hope that we'll be able to capture that increase with your support. We know that other compacts around the other states are investing in their compacts. They're very impressed with the work that we're doing nationally. Florida, in particular, has invested heavily in the compact. Washington is just reviewing that kind of support right now. So I would be more than happy to answer your questions. I really appreciate having a hearing. I would appreciate the support of the committee.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you partner or network with other service learning and civic engagement organizations.
Yes, we definitely do, with a number of them. Carlos has talked about MMEP, and Sam Shoup is here. We have Avista working for us. We're very pleased to have Avista working with us. We partner very closely with Serve Minnesota. We were part of a state plan, in fact, on service. We participated in our state's plan. We work with the Department of Education very closely. In fact, we were just two of my staff were presenting at their conference on Friday and did an excellent job, but we work very closely with Michelle Cavanaugh of the Department of Education on service learning. So we have a number of very strong partnerships. I actually have a whole page. If I'd given you my whole PowerPoint, I'd have the page of all the partnerships. It's actually a value of our organization that everything we do must be in partnership. And so we consider that that's an extraordinarily important part of what we're asking our campuses to do, to become collaborative with their communities. So we have to exert that value ourselves and do things in partnership. And I think that's really why Carlos is here, Representative Marianne is here, because we have a history of partnering together.
Ms. Reedy, you're losing, looking on your pie chart on page 6, you're losing $143,000 approximately of federal money.
Yes.
And then Representative Mariani, to his credit, is asking $440,000 a year to make up the...
Yes, it is an ambitious request, and I...
Could you live with a little less if we...
Pardon me? Absolutely. We could definitely live with less.
Is the federal money is completely dried up, or was
it... It will
there
be gone
grant?
As of the end of June. We're spending the last of it right now, yes. Yeah.
But is there still federal money available?
You know, it's just been awarded. We did try to receive that support. We worked very hard. We've had 6 years of support, and really the practice, because the federal budget is being cut very severely. Representative McCollum is on the committee looking at that in Washington. But they pass it around. We were the beneficiaries for 6 years. And so they passed it on to other states. What we did in part with that money was to really look at also generating some strength in our regional area, because we work across, we have tri-state collaboratives. We were working with Wisconsin and Iowa in our last grant, and we just simply did not get renewed, which really was not so much, it was extraordinarily competitive, and really because they moved it on to other states that did not have the support from the federal.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the $143 from the Fed, that's a yearly?
Yes, that's annual.
Mm-hmm. And so that compares to the $225
right.
In the request.
Okay, further questions? If not, thank you very much then for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I assume the motions here are the ladies over for...
Yes. Representative, I think... who moved this one? I know somebody did.
I'll move it.
Oh, Representative Feiner did. That's right, Representative Feiner did.
I'll renew my motion.
We don't need a renew because we already have it once. So we've got it here, and we'll decide when we're putting our bill together what we're going to do with it. Representative Mariani.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Have we done the minutes yet?
No, we haven't.
I'd like to move the minutes.
Moves the minutes of the 29th meeting on Monday, March 19th. Any additions or corrections? If not, was there any discussion about the way the committee beat me up at the end of the on here? Oh, okay.
Just a thingy, yeah. Mr. Chair. There's some discussion about beating up the committee chair that's going to be putting together the budget 3 days later.
That's what I was. Yeah, I was wondering. Good. I'm glad it's mentioned.
Not advisable.
And does it say anybody came to my defense or represent? Okay. Representative Mahoney moves the minutes of yesterday's meeting. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, House File 2053.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move 2053 to possible inclusion in our omnibus budget bill.
Representative Mahoney moves that House File 2053 be recommended passed and laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, House File 2053 is for a relatively small amount, $38,000.
But can I just interrupt for a second? Representative Severson and Senate members asked that his bill be pulled today. So, just so you're wondering. Oh, there's Representative Severson. Okay.
Thank you.
I thought, I didn't see you, and I thought maybe
the door,
Gunther and Norness would jump me again today and, you know, beat me up on something.
You got a complex.
That's not a complex. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House File 2053 is for a relatively small amount, $38,000. What this will do, and I will turn it over to Lynn Price here, the Executive Director of Minnesota Conservation Corps, but what it will do is hire interpreters for deaf students, deaf participants in this program. I'm not sure if there's students But and it is important for our for the deaf community to be part of the whole community. And if you look on the back of the your first sheet, your white the white sheet, these deaf children and young men and women, you can look at the things that they get to do. Really tells how they are part of society and how they start to understand their place. And it's the same place as a hearing person. So I've said my impassioned speech. You may know that my daughter is a deaf interpreter. So I get a whole lot more information, and I could spend a couple hours talking about it, but I will turn it over to Len Price at this particular time.
Welcome to the committee, former representative and former senator Len Price, who I've had the opportunity to serve in both capacities with. And I haven't forgotten what you did to me in that one committee. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Len Price, Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservation Corps. And I want to thank Representative Mahoney for sponsoring the bill. We were visiting with him one day in his office about the MCC and what we were doing, and he said, you have deaf students involved in this program? And we said, deaf and hard of hearing or hearing impaired students are part of our program. They've been with us since there was an MCC. And he said, well, why don't we get a bill drafted so we can give you some financial assistance? The situation is that in 2003, the Minnesota Conservation Corps became a nonprofit. It had been part of the Department of Natural Resources since 1991. And during the years it was part of the Department of Natural Resources, there were dollars appropriated to provide this assistance to hire interpreters and to help deaf students be part of the program. But of course, when we became a nonprofit, that terminated, that relationship and that source of funding terminated. So we put together this proposal. We typically get 6 to 8 deaf students in our program each year. We pay them, for some, the very first time they've ever had a job and gotten a paycheck. We pay them a small learning stipend, and then by virtue of having them be part of our crews, we need to have a signer or an interpreter available. And so the proposal would cover both the costs of the interpreter and the small learning stipend that we give to our students. The feedback from not only the deaf students, but the other corps members is unbelievable. For many young people in this 15 to 18 year age group, it's the first time they've had experience being with a deaf person, let alone working in a crew with them. For some of you that I visited, I may have shared the story from last summer when I was at St. Croix State Park, which is our base headquarters, and there was a crew of 15 to 18-year-olds composed of deaf students and hearing-impaired students as well as regular corps members, and their mission was to dismantle a beaver dam. And I wanted to see them do this, but I also wanted to see how this worked. How you could have a crew do this kind of work, which is not without some safety precautions. So I went to the site, and lo and behold, they had talked about how they were going to do this. And right before we got into the whole business of dismantling it, this young man who's 15 years old from Iron, Minnesota, must be on there in range someplace.
Iron Johnson.
Okay. He introduced himself to me and told me he was a sophomore in high school, and he was enjoying being part of the MCC. So they got into the water, and they had all their safety equipment on, and they got positioned correctly, because when you start to do this, who knows, it might be a 3-foot section of log that comes out, it might be 6 feet, and things are moving around. And they dismantled this thing in about 15 minutes without any problems at all. Young, enthusiastic, energetic young people. And when they came out, they were mud from their necks down. They smelled of the kind of stagnant water. And this young man came up to me, and he grabbed me by the shoulders, and he said, Len, this is the greatest day of my life. And I thought, now this is really interesting. Here's a kid, 15, who's never done this before, obviously, and it's hard work, but he really thought this was something very special. And the young people that were involved in this program that were deaf were also sharing that elation with the interpreters that were acting as assistant crew leaders. So, you know, this isn't a big sum of money. We've laid it out here in the materials you have about what the costs are. We're here to seek help. If we don't get it here, we will continue to have deaf students in our program. But every dollar that we can get towards our nonprofit operation is certainly a big help to us, and it certainly helps provide this opportunity for the deaf students. The materials that you have here also on the blue sheet outline some of the things that are typically things that people want to know about our program. What is it, for example, for workplace behaviors that a youngster would experience in this program? They're listed on the side that says Summer Youth Program Experience Objectives on the right-hand side. They learn about safety, punctuality, dependability, and so on. They learn healthy behaviors. They live together on the work site. They cook together. They play together. They learn together. It's a really great experience. And we hope that at some time in the future, they would continue in our other program, the Young Adult Program, where they can have an opportunity to experience more of this on a year-round basis and perhaps earn an AmeriCorps Education Award, which would help them in pursuing a college or technical education. On the back side of the blue sheet, we have results and outcomes, feedback from the participants as well as their parents, and you'll notice right in the middle of that graph, it says deaf and hard of hearing, and the outcome, increased understanding and appreciation of the deaf culture. 100% of the parents in the program last year said they agreed that they did see that in their youngster, and 85% of the youth that were in the program agreed that they had a better understanding as well. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, I'll stand for any questions.
First, just comments. Are there any questions of the witnesses in that? Just let me say this. First of all, the Minnesota Conservation Corps is a fantastic program. It's a shame that it got cut from being a state program, but I have to commend you and the others at your staff, at your agency, for the job that you've done in raising other dollars in other places, and you really have done a remarkable job. You know, my father was in the Civilian Conservation Corps, and I still see some of the folks that are still alive. In fact, Frank Valentini told me last summer that, Rukavina, you're a pretty good politician, but you couldn't carry a candle to your old man. He knew everybody from Ely to Grand Rapids, he said. And, my dad had started in the Civilian Conservation Corps, and the camaraderie and the relationships that lasted their entire lifetime. Spike Lukoski, I don't even know Spike's real name, but he's had a plastering business, and he learned his trade in the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I remember he told me once, when we were trying to expand the program with state dollars, that back in the Depression, Tommy, we had a choice of whether we were going to be criminals or productive citizens, and it was the Civilian Conservation Corps that turned me to be a productive citizen. So even in its concept back in the Depression, and, through what you're doing today, I think it's been a program that has helped young people really develop, and expand their horizons. So I commend you for what you've been doing, and I think this is, a really worthwhile. We should be able to find $38,000. We'll take it on a Dante's per diem, if nothing else. So,
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments that you made, and I should have prefaced my remarks by saying that we do, like other conservation corps in the country, consider ourselves the grandchildren of the CCC. We have great relationships with the groups that are in Virginia and Chisholm that are still part. They still get together annually, at least, sometimes more frequently. And I've had the great pleasure of talking to Mr. Valentini, who told me that he's taught probably every kid in in that area. He taught high school for many, many years.
He taught Thomasonian Janovich and Sertich. Well, maybe not Sertich, but Sertich's father. So we do have to talk to him. There's some problems there, but that's...
But your kind words are greatly appreciated, and we have other bills in that are asking for state funding, and we will know more about the House position probably next week when Representative Wagenius' committee puts the bill together. And as we speak, the Senate is deciding our level of funding in that Senate Environment Finance Budget Division as well.
Any questions on House File 20? Representative Haas?
No, I had a personal privilege after the discussion is finished here.
Oh, I thought you wanted to tell us how you were in the civilian conservation program.
I actually did. I did supervise one of the CCCs, so, but it was one of the real late ones. And we figured out how to get some money for the park department. So,
okay, any questions on the bill? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Representative Hahn.
Thank you very much. You notice all the red shirts in the room today from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We have other red shirts in the room from AARP. And I do not have to introduce them because these are really squared away people and they are wired up right, so they don't need the electrician. So
we're happy to have them. I had one of my constituents down today from ARP too. The only thing I would have to say is that heart you gave me to relax, it was made in China. So,
thank goodness they didn't give you a flag.
No, I squeezed it. I squeezed it when I was throwing it in the garbage.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Well, I can't help it. You know.
You're born this way.
The red shirts, by the way, are made in the USA, and they might even be union made. I'm not sure. Okay, no further business. We'll see you all tomorrow on time, I hope. Meeting adjourned.